There's a new neighbor in town. The Lutheran Federal Credit Union is open and ready to serve members of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Lutheran Federal Credit Union provides checking and savings accounts, home, car, and personal loans, on-demand mobile banking, 30,000 ATMs, and 5,000 in the co-op shared network. You'll find the modernized banking experience you need with excellent customer service and security you expect at LutheranFCU.org. LutheranFCU.org.
Now, people who know me well know I'm a pretty basic guy. I'm a Christian, a conservative, and a Republican in that order.
That's conservatism in a nutshell, that we are preserving the traditions of human society that, though tainted by sin, at least we're failing in opposition to those moral standards.
Look, Martin Luther King Jr. in the Civil Rights Movement was all about bringing the faith into the public square.
The Christian lives not by the words of the pastor, but by the words of God. And the pastor, if he's not speaking the words of God, well, who knows what he's doing? But he's not being a pastor of Jesus. He's not serving his church.
Northern Illinois chainsaw drivers, love, issues, etc.
The headline from Religion News Service reads, first openly LGBT United Methodist bishop, this is the time, is the quote from the Reverend Karen Olivito, now a bishop in the United Methodist Church. She's openly lesbian. What was keeping her and her supporters from making this election long before? And what is the status of openly gay clergy in the United Methodist Church? Is this something that is permitted under their governance or not? If not, then how is it happening? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Wednesday afternoon, July the 20th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking with Mark Tooley, president of the Institute on Religion and Democracy, about the first openly LGBT United Methodist bishop. A little bit later, we pick up our series after a long hiatus, our series on the Lutheran Confessions with Pastor Paul McCain of Concordia Publishing House. We're going to be right back where we left off, Luther's Large Catechism today, the Lord's Prayer, third petition, Thy Will Be Done. Luther spends a lot of time talking about the devil in that particular explanation of that petition. We'll find out why in about 15 minutes. Professor Ryan Teach joins us. We'll remember the Old Testament prophet Elijah, as the church does on this day. And then we'll talk about support for feminism and for Hillary Clinton from some young evangelical women. Rebecca Curtis will be our guest, co-author of the book Ladylike Living Biblically. You can join us for the next 2 hours with your questions or your comments. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc. For our beloved on-demand listeners, there's always the Issues Etc. comment line open 24-7, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about the first openly LGBT United Methodist bishop, Mark Tooley. He's a regular guest president of the Institute on Religion and Democracy based in Washington, D.C. He's author of the books Taking Back the United Methodist Church and Methodism in Politics in the 20th Century. Mark, welcome back.
Yes, always good to be with you.
Just to be clear here, does or does not the United Methodist Church approve of openly LGBT clergy?
No, it does not. The official policies of the church require that clergy be monogamous, if married, in the union of man and woman, or celibate, if single, and persons who are actively homosexual or sexually active outside of natural marriage may not be ordained in the church.
So tell us the story of Karen Olivito.
Well, unfortunately, there are liberal sections of the global United Methodist Church, especially on the West Coast, that have been operating in defiance of church policies for many years and play semantic games on this issue in order to ordain persons who are not living within prescribed Christian sexual standards. And Karen Olivetto is a clear example of what has happened in those regions. She is an openly avowed lesbian of many years, married to another woman, and the current pastor of a very radical church in San Francisco. So she was elected bishop by the Western jurisdiction of the denomination, which includes only about 2% of the denomination's total membership. And her election clearly was an effort to defy the church's laws and policies and to make a statement, a political statement, and they hope to precipitate a crisis.
So talk a little bit more about that. I want to, first of all, the semantic games that you say are played by those who are advocating for this. What particular do you mean by that, Mark?
Well, the local, we call them boards of ordained ministry that make decisions on who may enter the ordained ministry, which is a local decision. And so if they know someone is actively homosexual, they simply will not have to ask the question. And so the church law, which prohibits the ordination of anyone who is a self-avowed practicing homosexual, doesn't come into play from their perspective.
So it's don't ask, don't tell.
Effectively, yes.
Now, there, at least according to the Religion News Service story, there were attempts to kind of draft Karen Olivito into this position before, have her let her name stand for the election to bishop, but she refused up to this point. Why did she change her mind, apparently?
I don't know the background on that. The persons who are pretty openly homosexual have run for bishop before, but were not previously plausible candidates, mostly because they came from small churches. And previously, Karen Olivetto either was at a small church or she was teaching at a university or seminary. But she now is the pastor of the largest church in the Western jurisdiction. And so that made her more politically plausible, at least in that area.
You mentioned that the apparent purpose of this election now is to precipitate some kind of a crisis in the United Methodist Church. What exactly would that look like?
Well, the liberal side of the church has tried repeatedly for 40 years to overturn legislatively the church's standards on marriage and ordination and have failed to do so, and they realize they will continue to fail because the growing parts of the church are more conservative, especially overseas, and the liberal parts are the fastest declining, so they're losing demographically. So over the last several years, they have been advocating and practicing a campaign of defiance on the sexuality standards, hoping that if there are enough clergy who are openly homosexual, that this will make it a fait accompli. And clearly this election of an openly lesbian bishop is an escalation of that campaign of defiance.
What mechanism does the United Methodist Church currently have in order to deal with this according to its current position on who and who may and may not hold the position of pastor or bishop?
Unfortunately, the lines of accountability are not as direct and clear as they should be, and there's a lot of autonomy for local jurisdictions in the U.S. to effectively govern themselves. So if you have a whole jurisdiction, even if it's a very tiny one, it's difficult for the general church to insist upon compliance with the general church's rules. However, the south central jurisdiction of the church, rooted in Texas and the lower Midwest, voted almost immediately after Karen Olivetto's election as bishop to ask the church's top court, called the Judicial Council, to rule on the legality of her election.
What would happen if they were to say her election was illegal?
Well, if this United Methodist Judicial Council overturns her election, there may again be complications. If the Western jurisdiction refuses to comply with their ruling, and so the next step of the escalation could be having the general church cut off funding for her salary as bishop. And there again, if the Western jurisdiction comes up with its own funds for the salary, it remains an open question what the church can do next.
Is it possible that what those who are advocating for this move can get their way? In other words, just by simply, what shall we say, kind of squatting in this position that, you know, now we have an LGBT United Methodist bishop, try and do something about it. And if those efforts fail, they can claim, well, now de facto, if not on paper, de facto, the United Methodist Church has LGBT bishops.
Well, yes and no. With time, especially as the African part of the church grows, there will be the votes and the will to clamp down even further on enforcement and to take more punitive actions, although that will take time. It's also true that even though liberals effectively control their own areas of the church and almost do as they please, that is not sufficient for them. They cannot be happy or content or satisfied as long as the church itself disapproves of their behavior and this behavior, which they regard as a justice issue, and so long as they cannot persuade the whole church to adopt their revisionist perspective on marriage and sexuality, they cannot rest.
Why is it so important, Mark, that they have this symbolic, this kind of symbolic event take place? That is the elevation to the office of bishop of an openly LGBT person.
Well, from their perspective, it gives more legitimacy to their cause. And as I say, they hope will precipitate a de facto acceptance of openly LGBTQ clergy and bishops. But I think they're still in a bind because they just still will not have the votes to ratify it officially throughout the whole church because of the growing African part of our church. So some think the denomination is heading to a schism de facto or actual. I would be mildly more hopeful, and I think that the Judicial Council probably will invalidate the election of Karen Oliveto as bishop, and that there will be some level of compliance with their ruling, but we'll see.
This is not the first time this has happened, not in the United Methodist Church, but in other mainline Protestant bodies where they've essentially kind of gotten the cart before the horse. They have done something that's forbidden on paper in order to try and usher it in as an official, accepted with the official acceptance. It sounds like what you're saying is cooler heads, more reasonable heads, and more orthodox heads, at least in this case, are likely to prevail in time.
I think so, again, because of the demographic trends, but in all the other liberal mainline Protestant denominations where this took place, there was at some point an action by their governing body to ratify the acceptance of LGBTQ clergy. So, for example, when the Episcopal Church elected its first openly homosexual bishop in 2003, their governance is different from Methodism. So the bishop, Gene Robinson, was selected by the Diocese of New Hampshire, but it had to be ratified by the General Convention of the whole denomination, which it was, and that's not the case with Methodism.
What message is the Western Jurisdictional Conference sending to those African elements of the United Methodist Church by doing this?
Well, it's a message of I don't care what you think. And ironically, it's also a message of, yes, we're declining, we're dying, and we want you to join us. Your example of growth through the proclamation of the gospel is not relevant or instructive for us. We prefer the path of implosion as North American liberal Protestants.
Mark Tooley is president of the Institute on Religion and Democracy based in Washington, D.C. He's author of the books Taking Back the United Methodist Church and Methodism in Politics in the 20th Century. You'll find a link to the Institute on Religion and Democracy under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Mark, thank you very much for being our guest.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
A relevant resource for this subject is our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Sexual Morality in a Christless World. We find that it's not just in the world, but it also finds its way into the visible pale of the church. You can read this book from Concordia Publishing House. Order it from them. Call them 1-800-325-3040. Ask for Sexual Morality in a Christless World, 1-800-325-3040. Or browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find that book on every page of the website, Sexual Morality in a Christless World, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July. When we come back, we reignite our series on the Lutheran Confessions with Pastor Paul McCain of Concordia Publishing House, right back at Luther's Large Catechism, the Lord's Prayer, the Third Petition, Thy Will Be Done.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.